Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of the Really Cool People podcast, a podcast produced by Schweitzer Church. I'm your host, Jason Leininger. This is a place to hear stories of really cool people. The hope is that as we listen together, we'll be inspired, encouraged, and challenged through moments of serendipity. It's my joy in the next few moments to introduce you to someone who, confessedly, will consider themselves an ordinary person. Yet, as C.S. Lewis reminds us, there are no ordinary people. You and I have never talked to a mere mortal. And today we're going to meet Keith Lee. Keith Lee is in his 90s. He has lived a long and very interesting life. One of the stories Keith is going to tell us about is a time when he was a pastor and he was invited to go preach a sermon, and he said the only person he converted was himself. He's got a lot of other stories too. So, with much joy, I invite you to lean in and listen to the story of Keith Lee. Today, we're happy to have Keith Lee with us. And Keith, let's hear your story.
Well, I discovered this old world on July 6th, 1928. And it was a hot and humid night, according to my mother, and the katydids serenaded my birth. I was born at home, as were my four brothers and two sisters before me. My family was poor. Even the poor people called us poor. My father had a small farm on the Ozark hillsides, and we all worked on the farm. And while we worked hard, we had a big garden, and we never went hungry. We had our few cattle and a few chickens and a few hogs, and so we had our meat and our milk and our butter, and the only things we had to buy at the store were flour and sugar and spices and this sort of thing. But I started to school when I was 5 years old. I had a birthday in July, and in August, I started to a little one-room Eureka school. It was 2 miles away, so I walked with my older brother and my older sister. I walked the 2 miles to school at Eureka, and 2 miles home, of course, and we were barefoot. We only wore shoes when we had to go to town or when we went to Sunday school and church, and we hated those shoes because after going barefoot all week, they weren't very comfortable. But we attended the 8 years at the little one-room school, and we had to carry our lunch in a paper bag or in a wrapped-up newspaper. And we had a well at the school and a pump, and so we'd pump a bucket of water for the students, and we all drank out of the same bucket, of course, in the same dipper, but that was okay. We had a great time, and I remember one time I stubbed my toe, walking barefoot. I stubbed my toe on a rock, and I lost my big toenail, and it came back in all crooked, which is today the same. But we had a great time in school, and there were five of us in my class, four girls plus myself, and I graduated from the eighth grade and went to Nyingwa High School, rode the bus to the high school, and it was about 8 miles, and I attended the 4 years at the Nyingwa High School. There were 16 in our graduating class at high school. And I graduated when I was 16 because I started to school when I was 5. And I continued to work on the farm. While I was in high school, the Rural Electric Association, which is known more commonly as the REA, set poles along our country road and strung wire. So we had electricity. After I graduated from high school, there was one bulb in the middle of the room with a pull string on it that turned the light on and off. No radio, no television, of course. And we never had a radio until after I was graduated from high school. If something was on the radio and we heard about it and wanted to listen, we walked a half mile up the road to the little country store and listened to their radio. I remember my father liked to listen to the prize fights, and Joe Louis was the champion, and we'd go to hear Joe Louis fight his opponents. After I graduated from high school, I worked on the farm, and we had just a great time growing up, and I wasn't a Christian at the time, so I didn't go to college until I felt the Lord call me to preach after I became a Christian, and I started college when I was 24. Went to Asbury College in Wilmore, Kentucky, and that was one of the blessings of my life was to attend Asbury College. I attended, I graduated within 3 years for the college and went on across the street to the Asbury Seminary, and I graduated seminary in 2 years. So that was 5 years before I finished, but I worked, and I had two little churches up in the mountains of Kentucky, eastern Kentucky, Clay City and Roslyn. They were the only two churches in Clay County, and I served those two churches and worked at the college. I worked at whatever jobs I could find, and was able to graduate from college without owing any money. And that in itself was a miracle, because when I started the college, I only had enough to go for one term. And didn't see my way clear to finish, but the Lord provided. I remember going to my post office box there at the college a number of times, and I would find a $5 bill in my post office box. I had no idea where it came from. I found a package of toothpaste. One time I found a Bible, Bible that I longed for and hoped for, and I have no idea where it came from either. But some miraculous way, the first classes I had, one of them was a psychology class. And in that psychology class, there was a young pastor who had two churches in Indiana. And it seems that the district had three nights for God, and he had two churches, and he could only preach at one of them, so he asked me if I would preach at the other church. One night we preached on worship. The second night was on prayer. The third night was on tithing. I wasn't a tither. I couldn't see my way clear to tithe because I didn't have any money. I was just living from one day to the next. And I said, Lord, I don't have any money. I can't tithe. And the Lord told me while I was preparing this sermon and preaching this sermon, said, you can't afford not to tithe because you don't have any money. You can't afford not to tithe. You must trust me, try me, and prove me. And there was only one convert at that service, and that was me. And that was one of the greatest decisions I ever made, was to begin tithing. And I finished college and seminary without owing a penny. In fact, I had $100 left. And while I was in seminary, I met Corley Burns, who was from Malvern, Ohio. And Corley had been in Brazil for 4.5 years as a missionary, and she came back to the seminary for another degree. And we met there, and I had $100 left from my school. I bought her a diamond ring. It wasn't a big one, but it was a diamond ring, and she wore it proudly until she died. We got married on August 15th, 1959. Because Asbury Seminary was not accredited at that time, and the United Methodist Church required us to graduate from an accredited seminary, I went on to Drew University at Madison, New Jersey for another degree. And Corley taught school in New Jersey while I attended school. I earned another degree, and after that, we moved back to Missouri and served the little church at Willard United Methodist Church. And we were there for 4 years. While we were there, my father died. Plus, our son Timothy was born. We moved from Willard to Camden, Missouri, and there we stayed 18 years, and we adopted two children, Thomas and Lois Ann. We moved from Camden to Pleasant Hill, Missouri, and we stayed there for 6 years. That's where my mother died while we were at Pleasant Hill. We moved away from there to Lamar, Missouri. I stayed 6 years and retired at Lamar. And we moved from Lamar after retirement and moved to Halfway, Missouri, and lived on a little farm for 12 years and had a big garden and had some cattle and had some chickens. We decided it was time to move closer to Springfield, closer to doctors. So in 2006, we built a new home just north of Springfield and moved into a new home and lived there, of course, until the present. Corley's health began to fail in 2020, and she passed away in the end of 2020, December 6, 2020. And I still live on the farm, or on the little acreage there. I have 10 acres, which I mow, and I have a small garden, and I have lots of flowers, and I'm enjoying wonderful neighbors, and hope to live there until the Lord calls me home.
That is an incredible journey. A long ways in life, from starting on the hills of Missouri with no electric. And I'm going to guess that you probably didn't have indoor plumbing.
No indoor plumbing, of course. No refrigeration or anything. And had kerosene lamps. And it was quite primitive, but learned a lot from living that way, you know. Learned to be frugal and work hard, and that's all because of my early childhood.
Yeah. You talked about that one room schoolhouse, and what it was like to do your 8 years there. So I take it you didn't have kindergarten, because most people.
No kindergarten. No, no. I was, as I said, I was five. I don't remember, because that's been 85 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember my first grade teacher. I do know that my sister-in-law, my oldest brother, Floyd, married a school teacher, and she taught for two or three years during my early childhood school years. But I don't remember specifically what years those were. But she could tell quite some stories about me. I wasn't the best student, and I wasn't the best behaved students in school either, so she had some discipline problems. I have had my hands spanked with some ruler a few times.
One of the things you mentioned when you were talking about those early times was that you didn't wear shoes, and shoes became they were bothersome when you had to go to town or go to church. What did you do in the wintertime, or when it got cold?
Well, of course, we wore shoes when it got real cold. Yes, we had shoes, but we had school clothes and we had work clothes. So when we went to school, we wore our school clothes, and when we came home, we changed into our work clothes. And same way with our Sunday clothes. We had Sunday clothes, but we only wore them on Sunday. And then we would come back and put our work clothes on.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you also mentioned, you said poor people called us poor.
Yes.
So I wonder, I think back to some other stories about folks who lived in the kind of condition that you talked about your own life was in. And when it came time for holidays, do you have any special memory of like Christmas or Easter or?
Christmas, we had one toy at Christmas, and that's all. And of course, we made our own toys, and we made our own games, and it may have been a tin can that we batted around, but if we had a ball of string, of course we could use that for to play ball or to play catch or ante over the house, and we did that a lot too.
I've been there and done some of those games, yeah, but not to the degree that you did. Those are special memories. One of the things you said, you said that you graduated high school. You weren't a Christian at that point, and then you said you went away to college when you were 24. But would you mind talking about that space in there where the Lord met you and what that was like and what you were going through? And
my home was Christian home. My brothers and sisters set good examples, and my father and mother set good examples for me. I never heard my brothers and sisters or my parents say a word that I would be ashamed to repeat in any company. They didn't smoke, they didn't drink, they didn't swear. They set very high standard for me. And when I was 11 years old, attending the little one-room school, the Eureka Methodist Church was next door, and they had a revival. And during the revival, they had day services as well as night services. And so I remember the teacher allowing us to go from the school to the little church next door for the revival services if we wanted to go. And I remember going when I was 11 years old, and the service, during the service, some different people came and talked to me about giving my life to Christ. And I didn't fully understand, Jason, at the time, what that meant, even though I was 11 years old, but very rural and, very primitive, and I really didn't fully understand. But I was willing to respond because they asked me to, and so I joined the church, and during my teen years, I had no sense of forgiveness, no sense of assurance. I acted as though I were a Christian. I was a member of the church, and everyone thought I was a Christian. I grew up attending church and Sunday school all the time. And I remember many times I would be alone and in prayer, asking God to give me assurance, to give me peace about my salvation, to let me know that I was saved. And I prayed, and I would cry, and I would beg God to forgive me and to save me. And this went on for years during high school and even after I graduated from high school. And I attended church wherever there was church, whether it was at our home church or whether other churches, revivals. I attended revival meetings wherever I could go, and everyone thought I was a great Christian, and I lived as morally that they had no questions, but inside I knew I wasn't where God wanted me to be. And I remember having the revival came to our church, and I attended, of course, every night and the days. And the pastor would call on me to pray, which I would pray, and I would teach Sunday school class, whatever I was asked to do. But without any sense of peace or without any sense of assurance. And the evangelist called on me to dismiss the service on Sunday night after the revival, And I prayed and dismissed the service, but I told God that tomorrow I'm going to make peace with God. Tomorrow, it seemed to me that God was saying, you have to do this publicly. You have to do this before the church. You know, you can't settle this alone. You pretended, you've been a hypocrite. You have to do this publicly. So I made up my mind that night that I was going to do that the next morning, which would have been Monday morning in the service. And I remember Monday morning early, I went out after the chores were done and spent a lot of time in prayer and came in home, standing in the kitchen. And my mother was there, and she said, "Keith, there's something wrong. There's something going on. What's going on?" You know, mothers have a way of knowing what you're thinking and what's going on in your life. And I said, she said, "Has God called you to preach?" And I said, "Mom, I'm not even a Christian. I don't know the Lord. I have no peace at all." And she said, "Oh, Keith." And she said, "Do you want to pray?" And I said, It won't do any good. Said, "I've been praying and begging God for years, and it won't do any good. I've got to go before the church and tell them that I'm not a Christian, that I'm a hypocrite. I'm a member of the church, but I'm not saved." And so we went to church that morning, and she said, before we entered the church, she said, "Would you like me to talk to the evangelist and have him come out and talk to you?" And I said, "Yes." And he came out and about half carried me into the church, set me down in the front row, and he just announced, said, "Keith has something to say." And I got up and I confessed to the people that I'd been a hypocrite and I'd been teaching Sunday school and I hadn't been the Christian that I claimed to be. And I was going to ask God for mercy and grace. And I just fell across the altar there and began praying. And I prayed for, I suppose, an hour. And I told God that I wasn't going to leave that place until I had peace. I said, "Lord, I may die here, I don't know, but I'm not going to leave until I get peace." And I prayed and prayed and confessed every sin I knew, confessed to the Lord that I was a hypocrite and deserving of eternal punishment. And after a while, I felt at ease and at peace, and I noticed that there was another gentleman kneeling at the altar, and I just scooted over and put my arm on his shoulder and started to pray. And the evangelist said, "Keith, has the Lord saved you?" And I said, "Oh, yes." And he said, "Well, stand up and tell us about it." I stood up, and the glory fell, and I began crying and praising God and shouting and hugging everybody that came by. Such an experience that I can never forget. I went out that morning and the sky was bluer than I had ever seen it. The grass was greener. I thought God had washed the world. And I lived in that state of ecstasy for weeks and weeks. And went all around to the neighbors and told them about Jesus. I began preaching the next Sunday. Preached in every schoolhouse and every church house in the area. I couldn't wait to get to Asbury College. Didn't have any money, as I said. Didn't know how I was going to get through. First class I had was a psychology class, and I remember a student there had a church, and he invited me, and I preached revivals. I preached at every church that was open to me, and it'd take an offering, and I had a few dollars, and I'd have enough to pay for the next semester, and that's the way I got through college and seminary, just by the grace of the Lord. I was so blessed. The greatest experience of my life was going to Asbury.
One of the things that has, over the course of your life, has been a constant conversation with folks is how education and learning can add to faith, or some folks think that it can detract from faith. But you had this profound experience of transformation, meeting with the Lord, and then there's this deep desire to go learn and to explore and to grow intellectually and spiritually both. How did you find that experience of growing both intellectually and spiritually?
I felt the Lord deserved the best. And I felt that I couldn't be the best until I went to the best college and seminary and got the best education I could possibly get. I remember E. Stanley Jones saying that he was at the bottom of the class until he became a Christian. And he said, this is no place for a Christian. So he went to the head of the class. And I felt, you know, my high school, I just barely got through. I wasn't interested in grades. I wasn't interested in school. So I didn't have a very good foundation to go to college. But I felt that I had to be the best that I could be. And I remember I was on the dean's list most of the time, if not all the time. I had one class, citizenship, under Miss Chicarella. And it wasn't my best class. And I remember it was at the end of the year, first year, and we were studying for the final in Miss Chicarella's class, and I remember four or five guys coming into my room to study for the final exam. One of the guys had a test paper from Miss Chicarella's class for the past year, and it was well known that Miss Chicarella gave the same test every year. It was in my room. These guys came, and one of them had the test paper, so we studied off the test paper, and all of us made 100. You know, we got a perfect score. I went home that summer, and I couldn't pray. Every time I'd get down to pray, I'd tell the Lord, "Lord, I'm studying to be a pastor, a preacher." And that test paper would show up. Made 100 in Miss Chicarella's class. And I couldn't pray. Every time I'd kneel down, I'd think of that test paper. I couldn't wait to get back in the fall, and first thing I did, I went into the dean's office and said, "Dean, I got a confession to make." He said, "Well, what is it?" And I said, "Well," and I told him the story about studying with these guys. They're in my classroom. I mean, they were in my room at the dorm. I couldn't leave. I didn't bring the paper. But that's no excuse. Said, "I cheated. I should have walked out. I should have told them, no, I won't study." He said, "Well, what do you think I should do?" And I said, "I don't care if you fail me. I don't care what you do, but I've got to get this off my chest, off my heart." And he prayed with me, and we both wept. And I walked out with so light, I felt like I was walking on air. I'd rid my heart of that one cheating. He lowered my grade 1 point only. He didn't fail me. But I made 3 A's and the B. But that was one of those times that I regret, you know, having not acted as I should. I don't know how the other guys handled it. It's not my problem. But I know how I handled it. I had to get it off my heart.
How did that experience play itself out in the rest of your life as you pastored from place to place, as you live life with Coralie, as you raise your kids? How did that shape you?
Well, because I suffered so much through that summer with that on my mind, I think I've avoided a lot of pitfalls, because I don't want to ever get in that position again. Honesty and integrity, a good name, nothing equals that. And I've tried to be honest, and I've tried to be sincere, and keep a good name.
I could ask you a lot about what your time in ministry was like. And maybe we'll have to do that for another time, because there's a lot of, I think we could probably talk for hours on your life story and your time in ministry. But one of the things that I'd love to come back around to is, I've met some of your grandkids, know some of your grandkids. And so I'm wondering about, as you're in your 90s, you know, what do you look for and hope for in the future? What do you, because I know you're also invested in your grandkids. And so how do you look forward to the future for you and for them and for the world?
Well, as I said, I want to have a good name. I want them to be able to say of their grandpa, he was real. He was genuine. I don't want to play act any longer. I've been a hypocrite too much in my life. I want to be sincere. I want to finish strong for my children, for my grandchildren.
You are finishing strong. What's in your garden right now?
Well, seed. I I've watered my garden several times trying to get my seed up, and it is not coming up like I would like for it to. I've replanted some of it, and I'm hoping and praying for rain. Rain can do what I can't do.
It's kind of a metaphor for life, isn't it?
I love gardening. I love to watch things grow. It isn't economical. It isn't profitable. It's something that I do for just for the pleasure of seeing it grow.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything you love to grow? Like anything
you plant? I have green beans and sweet corn, and I plant enough sweet corn so the raccoons can have their share, and I get what they leave. And I have blackberries, and I have tomatoes, and
is there anything that you'd like to, anything you wanted to talk about that we haven't touched on?
I don't know that there is. I am excited every day when I get up. I look forward to getting up and getting on with life. I've often said that if there were no heaven, it would be worth serving the Lord just for the joy and the peace and the love that I experience in this life. This dear lady who was always praising the Lord and praising the Lord, and someone asked her one time, said, Auntie, if you get to heaven's gates and they won't let you in, what will you do? And she said, I'll just shout all around the gates for the trip I've had. And I've had a tremendous trip, and I can hardly wait to see what it waits me in today and tomorrow. So I bounce out of bed and I do my exercises and eat a little breakfast and have my devotions and get on with the day. It's exciting.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you for coming in and for sharing your story with us. A life well lived, full life, and still continuing to be full. And we're going to have to schedule another time where we can talk about your life as a pastor and what that was like and all those different moves and raising kids through all that. So much more that we didn't get to. One final question that I've tended to ask. Do you have a final word or piece of sage advice that you'd like to leave with us?
The best is yet to come. I reminded of the story of the dear lady who wanted to be buried with her fork, which you've heard the story. And when asked, why do you want to be buried with the fork? And she said, well, when we go to these potluck dinners, they always ask me to keep my fork because I know there's going to be cherry pie and gooseberry pie and blackberry pie and pumpkin pie waiting. So she wanted to be buried with her fork because the best is yet to come. There's dessert ahead. But as I said, even if there were no heaven, it would still be worth serving the Lord just for the peace and joy and love that he gives.
Well, thank you much, Keith, for this time. You are a fantastic person, and it has been a joy to sit here with you for a few minutes and listen.
Thank you. Yeah.
A big thank you to Keith Lee for sharing his story. In listening to Keith, I hope you were inspired, encouraged, and challenged, and that you find a way to begin beholding and enjoying the really cool people that are around you. This is a bonus episode, and so we're taking a little break, and we hope to see you again in the fall. The Really Cool People podcast is produced by Switzer Church, Springfield, Missouri. Taylor Likes is our executive producer and editor, and I'm your host, Jason Leininger. You can help us by liking, reviewing, and sharing this podcast. Until next time.